This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 4, Episode 34. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can call us on
020-323-9754.
And you can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
My name's David Hinchliff, and this week I'm joined by Mark Garraway and Berners. Welcome to the show, Garrows. Welcome to the show, Berners. It's a noisy background where you are today, Garrows.
Yeah, I'm in a cafe. Hey, mate.
You're in a cafe. Oh, lovely. And what's your beverage of choice today?
Oh, I've got a Diet Coke sitting in front of me at the moment.
Oh, fabulous.
Although other brands are obviously available.
Yeah, but Diet Cokes, that's the best. Here's a fact about Diet Coke. This is one of those actually things. Whenever they do taste testing, blind taste testing, people always say they prefer Diet Pepsi whenever they try it. They always prefer the taste of Diet Pepsi whenever they try it.
Right.
But yet Diet Coke is miles away the market leader in diet cola drinks, ahead of Diet Pepsi.
It's not remarkable.
And apparently the reason that is that in a blind taste test, people will always go for the one that tastes sweeter, and Pepsi tastes sweeter.
Okay, I got you.
But brand is about more than taste, it seems.
It certainly is.
I was approached once about appearing in one of the Diet Coke adverts, but we had a demo.
We got some cricket news as well as Diet Coke news, though, this week. I was interested to read about Sourav Ganguly getting involved with developing young players in Bengal. Did you see that, Gareth?
I did, yeah. I had a good old read of that. I thought it was very interesting in that they previously had a committee and now it's just down to him. So away you go, Sourav. Good luck.
Yeah. That's interesting. So I guess, we don't really know the details of it. So it'd be interesting to know what he'll be doing there. I mean, I guess he's providing a leadership role and trying to get more quality coaches in front of talented players. I guess that's going to be his mission.
Yeah, I mean, they've had a bit of a rough ride for somewhere which has such a heritage and such a big area as well. So they're obviously looking to invest some time and some effort into producing their own. And who better to do it than the guy who's probably the most synonymous fella from the region to do that. But, it'd be interesting to see what methods he puts in, who he brings in, whether he develops coaches from within the state. It's going to be intriguing to see his approach over the course of the next few weeks and months.
Yeah, and they're going to be taking a camp structure. So, I guess that's slightly different from the way that things are done in other parts of the world, in Australia and in England, where it's more of a regular structure. In Bengal, they're looking more at camps. And I guess that makes more sense when there's a big pool of talent out there, which is untapped, and you want to see what you've got. You put a camp together, you call in the kids from the country, and you see who turns up.
Well, yeah, you do. And also because of the road infrastructures as well, you have to go to them rather than as we do in this country, which I don't always think is the way to go, where we expect everybody to go into a headquarters, and everybody makes a journey in. So I think that's a good model. I think it's one that works not just in India, but also all over the world, because, somebody like a Glenn McGrath lived a number of hours outside of the headquarters, but was still a world-class bowler. So sometimes you have to go out into the regions to find that talent.
Berners, what do you think? Sourav Ganguly heading up Bengal's cricket coaching. What's the what's your thoughts on that?
Brilliant. I was out there with Kolkata Knight Riders, actually, where he played. And he's a massive icon out there because he's a local man. And I know that they, actually, interestingly enough, Bengal is one of the only places in India where soccer is actually taking the presidency over cricket. So I'm figuring that they're probably getting him in as a bit of a spearhead and, local kind of hero to kind of pick things up over there, because I think they're feeling the threat of soccer ball a little bit.
Well, yeah, reputation does count for a lot everywhere in the world, but I think in India it counts for even more than it does in other parts of the world, doesn't it? If you've got a big name, then that does attract people a lot in even more excited numbers than anywhere else in the world.
Yeah. Also, he's got the character, isn't he? You know, and the belief in himself to be able to carry it off. And it did make me chuckle, you know, knowing a little bit about him and spending a bit of time. I actually found him a really engaging person. And, you know, if his character manages to inspire others and to get people playing and finding that talent all the way over the region, then that would be great.
Speaking of environment as well, there was another news story this week that Zaire Khan and Yuvraj Singh have been in France, of all places. And they have been working with a private trainer called Tim Exeter, who that's a name I haven't come across before. Mm. But they've been doing some heavy physical work in preparation for the start of the Indian domestic season.
Yeah. Fantastic. I mean, I was out in India, when was it? About a year ago, and I saw Zaire at the Cricket Club of India, and you know, he didn't look in great shape, let's be brutally honest. And Yuvraj has always battled against the bulge a little bit, and he was always somebody that I used to try and get on the treadmill next to him in the hotels, because he'd make me look a bit better than I was. So. So I'm not surprised that either of them, you know, needed some help. They've been provided with help over the years, because I've known all of the strength and conditioning coaches that they've had with India, and they were all good as well. They were fantastic folks. But I think they've both come to the stages now, and they've both had experiences where they're not automatic picks, and probably it's just made them think, well, you know, actually we need to do that a little bit more. And knowing Fletcher in the way that I do, he'd be very, very keen on the physicality of the game. He recognised that was one of the areas of weakness that India had. And I'm sure MS Dhoni is on board with that, being somebody who's always prided himself in his strength and his speed in particular. So the two of them have taken a decision, largely off their own backs, to get themselves into nick. So, you know, it'll be interesting to watch this space. But the crucial thing for me, though, is that these are two guys relatively senior in their games. The interesting bit will be when they come back to start playing first class cricket in India, is whether they actually keep some of those habits that they'd have learned under Tim Exeter, and whether, you know, they can keep the weight off and keep themselves fit, because they're going to need that if they're going to break into this Indian side, because it's beginning to shape up quite nicely.
Yeah, that's the challenge. And you do see these camps, it's not just for elite athletes. You do see them at every level, you know, for people who want to lose a bit of weight or get a little bit stronger or just get a little bit more athletic. You see these camps and they go on for X amount of time, and then people are thrown back into the world. So as you said, Gareth, I think the biggest challenge for Yuvraj, Zaire or anyone doing these kind of sort of intense type of training is it definitely works. It definitely works in the short term. But the long-term aim is to turn it into a habit for a lifetime. Mm. And not just a cricketing lifetime, but an actual lifetime, you know, because fitness is important even when you stop playing. So, yeah, I think that's going to be the key challenge for them. And I hope that they are able to do that, because those camps are great, really good, really intense. They really allow you to focus on one thing for a set period of time, which is always helps. But I know that the rate of keep turning that into a habit can be relatively low. So that's the next challenge for those two guys. And I hope they keep it going. You know how tough it is to keep an exercise regimen going, don't you, Berners?
Oh, I'm just looking this place up. Brive-le-Gaillard in some kind of French Provence. It looks like it's got the worst nightlife you could ever imagine.
He's got the idea.
Under lock and keys, a bit of water and some chicken and rice, and off you go. Yeah, fitness is important, but for me personally, not really.
What are you thinking there, Berners?
I was saying just to have to send them away for a six-week kind of fat camp is a little bit desperate measures, isn't it? You'd think they'd be able to take care of their own bodies.
Yeah, I think it was their own decision, wasn't it? Reading between the lines, you know, to go to France, and I wonder whether if some of it, you know, the fact that they end up in France was linked at all to some contacts that Yuvraj may have picked up during his bout of illness that he's really great news has got over.
Yeah.
But I should imagine his real interest in getting himself fit is probably deeper than just playing cricket. And I should imagine there's some serious health benefits to him and as part of his rehabilitation from his brush with cancer, which, you know, was obviously devastating news for him and for everybody involved in Indian cricket. So let's look at it in a positive light.
Definitely.
If it is something that they have done off their own back, saying good on them, but the question has to be asked when they come back, you know, are they going to keep those habits that we've talked about? And if they do, then cricket's going to be an exciting place, because having been on the end of Yuvraj, particularly when he bashed my mate Brodie for 6-6, and also having seen the best of Zahir Khan, where, you know, he's one of the best reverse swing bowlers in the world, but has found it increasingly hard to get the pace up to be able to get the ball to do it on a regular basis when the ball's in the right condition. If those two can come back, be added into the Indian team, it's going to help India, but more importantly than that, it's going to have, you know, some real good spectacles out on cricket pitches for us all to watch, and that's what we're all about. So I'm quite excited. I'm interested to see how they go, but I'm sure that we'll find out in the next month or two.
Right, let's wrap up this introductory section with our normal yes-no round. A lovely little feature where Gareth and I only get to answer yes or no to three questions posed to us by Berners, no matter how much more we want to say. So, Berners, what are the three questions this week?
Our first question is, fast bowling is about strength.
Yes.
Yes.
Our second question, should the ECB provide all England fans with a refund for playing understrength teams?
No.
No.
Third question, were the England players right in watering the Oval Square themselves?
No.
No.
Okay, so we're going to head into the mailbag now and delve around inside, see what we can come up with. Two questions, and they both get answered by Gareth and myself, with Berners chipping in with his own unique brand of advice. And the best question of the week wins the prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So, Berners, what's the first question from this week's mailbag?
The first question is from Luabzin, who says that he's just discovered what it means to play with a dominant top hand in control. After he saw a one-hand batting drill on the internet, he's saying that he tried it and his bat comes down straighter and he likes the feel as if he's timing it better in the nets, and also the sound it makes when he makes contact.
Excellent.
But he fears that he may be compromising on the power side of things, and he's saying that he is actually a power hitter, which explains the heavy bottom hand hitting that he normally brings into the game. And he just wants to know what we can suggest as to some advice where he can add some more power to his shots when he needs to up the tempo. He's saying that he bats at 6 or 7 in the order and he's never really had a coach to be able to coach him on his technique. So it sounds like he's trying to bring two different skills together.
Yes, power and timing, bring them together to make the ultimate batsman. It is a bit of a cliche, but I guess it's also true as well in that some players are sweet timers of the ball. They don't seem to be hitting the ball hard. They tend to be called as top hand players, and you have the guys who smash it out of the park, and they tend to be referred to as bottom hand players. Where does reality fit into that?
Well, the reality is I don't necessarily agree with the general perception that you've just put across. But going back to the question, which is about one-handed drills and what have you, really valuable. And it sounds like there's been some initial benefit in terms of the bat path. You know, a one-handed drill is fantastic and it's done its job there. But then you need to test it by getting, you know, what does your bottom hand do? So you've done top hand, but can you play one-handed drills with your bottom hand and keep the bat face on the line of a ball? Because once you master that as well, it sounds as if you want to hit the ball hard. And I'm sure that if you're wanting to hit the ball hard, and from what you've told us, but you know, I can't tell you because I haven't seen it, but from what you've told us, that the bottom hand does come come into play when you hitting the ball hard. Now, if you can hit the ball hard with your bottom hand with two hands on the bat, I'm sure you can do it with one hand. So if you can train your bottom hand to go through the same line of the ball as your top hand, when you put the two of them together, what should happen is you should be able to apply power as well as that bat alignment through the ball. And what that should do is open up scoring areas for yourself. Now, you know, most players that are power hitters would be power hitters predominantly from, say, mid-off over to backward square leg, you know, and that power hitting doesn't just come from the hands, but comes from the body and the rotation of the body and how all of that works. But my starting point for you would be, well done on the top hand. Now let's have a look at the bottom hand. So the same drills that you did with your top hand, see if you can get, you just put your top hand behind your back and play with your bottom hand and see how that feels. And can you keep your back going through the line of the ball and just drive the ball back down the ground, or if it's a bit wider to mid off, or if it's a bit straighter to mid on, and see how you go with that. And once you've mastered that, then put the two together and see how you go. Great starting point with your top hand stuff, but actually there's a lot of other little drills that I've just talked about that you can stick on top of that. And then I'd be interested in your feedback of how powerfully you think you can hit the ball whilst keeping the bat going directly through the line of the ball.
Now, that's interesting that you say the bottom hand drills. I've always been reluctant to use those, and perhaps you can help me with this, Gareth. I've always been reluctant to use bottom hand drills purely because if someone has a light bottom hand grip, then it's going to be hard for them to hold the bat with just the bottom hand. If you're choking it a bit more, if you've got a tighter bottom hand grip, then it's going to be easier to do those drills. But what about the guys who have a very light grip, bottom hand grip on the bat, almost too light to be able to hold the bat while you're doing those drills?
If their grip's too light to hold the bat, then I'd stick a lighter bat in their hands, or maybe even a one of the iron bats, you know, the ones with the trimmed edges off, because you can still do your tennis ball drills doing that. So you have to find an appropriate weight bat to stick in their hand to allow their bottom hand to go through the line of a ball without dropping the bat. Yeah. So that would be my thing with that. Then when you put two hands on the bat, you obviously put their bat in their hands, the one that they will use out in the middle, or a similar weighted bat, and see what the impact is of that. But I think the bottom hand drill is really, really valuable. It's something that was taught to me by Desmond Haynes, and I just used a kid's bat actually when we were doing that. So a size 4 I used when we were doing that drill that I nicked out of my school's coaching bag, and he would bobble feed tennis balls to me, and I'd use that, and for exactly the same reason that you just said, so I didn't start to choke the bottom hand and do things that I wouldn't normally do. So that's what I did, and I've used that drill that Desi taught me a million times with players, and you can develop that drill by getting people to hit over the top and come down the wicket and hit over the top using their bottom hand, and you often see the ball going straight back over the top of the bowler's head and them going, well, I didn't know I could do that. Then all of a sudden you start seeing them doing that within their throwdowns with two hands on the bat using their normal size bat, and then you start seeing them do it against bowling machines, and you start seeing them do it against bowlers when they go to the net. So that would be my answer to that one. Great question, absolutely brilliant. And that's the way that we got over that that challenge with myself and Desi.
And there's a good progression for both top and bottom hand, which I've seen Toby Radford do, which is to play a one-hand drill, and then when you get to the top of the shot, put your other hand back onto the bat, bring it back down in reverse, and then do the same thing again.
Yeah, absolutely. I've seen Toby do that as well. It's a good one. I forgot that. That's a great one.
And that's helping you get the hands working together, because you have to progress. It's good learning the positioning of the top hand and the position of the bottom hand and the bat in relation to that, the swing of the bat in relation to that. But getting them both working together is the next step forward, isn't it? So that's a really nice little drill that Toby's done. Former Middlesex coach, of course.
Yeah, and West Indies assistant coach, doing a great job out there with Otis Gibson at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Our next question comes in from Philip, and he's got a question about spin bowling. He's just wondering what type of spinner would be the most effective if a captain was in a certain situation where he'd have to choose between a left-armer wrist spinner or a right-arm finger spinner. both of similar ability, what would you go for? Would you go for the right or the left? I think there might be a bit more in this answer than whether it's just right or left, though.
Yeah, so both, unusually in this choice, it's both turning the ball in to the right-hander, left arm wrist spin and right arm finger spin. So the ball's turning in both ways. I mean, it's going to be quite situationally dependent, and we're going to have to assume that both of these players are of an equal standard, which is a big assumption, of course, you know, because, you know, a wrist spinner tends to be less accurate than a finger spinner, but not always. So, Gareth, how do we unpick this one?
Well, I think you set it up quite well. I think we look at the benefits of each, and, you know, it might be that your left arm spinner doesn't spin it massively, because we have known certain leg spinners or wrist spinners not to turn it. And Il Cumbo being a classic example. So, you know, we can't just assume that, that they spin it more, because Il Cumbo got, 500 plus 600. Test wickets and got the odd ball to go off straight. You know, Mushtaq Ahmed had little bits of spin as opposed to the big ripping leg spinners that we associate with Shane Warne or a Brad Hogg, who would probably be the most appropriate in this within this question. I mean, how do you look at it? If they're both of equal standing and if they both turn it big, then you'd probably go with the left arm guy. And the reason being is that there's less of them around, which means that people have had less practice against them. Mm-hmm. So I'd go with that purely because it would be different. And, you know, certainly when Brad Hogg played for Australia, nobody would say he was one of the best bowlers in the world, because he wasn't. But just for the fact that there wasn't anybody else around on the world circuit that people played against on the regular basis, and there was a very, very few in domestic cricket, He in each of the countries, he came on and, you know, he effectively, when Warne didn't go to a World Cup, he contributed to them winning a World Cup in a significant fashion because nobody was used to it. So that's going to be my answer. I'm going to say that everything's exactly the same. They both get the same amount of revs on it. They both spin it the same amount. I'd go with a left armer purely because lack of practice and lack of exposure that people have had to that type of bowling.
Yeah, I think I'm going to agree with you, Gareth. There's also the option possibly of the googly as well, which can bring in moving the ball away from the right hander which is an unusual thing. Mm-hmm. I once a left-handed opening club batsman once said to me that he just simply cannot face left arm wrist spinners. He just can't do it because he's not used to that. He's not used to that type of bowling. And he said, I mean, whether it's a psychological thing or not, but he said, you know, if you've got a left-hander in, you should always bring your left-arm wrist spinner on, because they're even more fearful of a left-arm wrist spinner than anybody else, because suddenly it's a mirror image of what right-handers are used to when they face a normal leggy. So that's an interesting variation on it as well. But yeah, I'm going to have to agree with you, Gareth. If everything else is equal, then it's purely down to there's a lot of off spinners around and there's not many Chinaman bowlers around.
It was interesting in this series, though, wasn't it? I mean, not talking about Chinaman here, but with Steve Smith and the rev counter, you know, the TrackMan rev counter that was on the television, which I thought was really, it was brilliant, you know, to see the revolutions on the ball. And it's something that we've seen in England with the England cricket team in practice for a few years, but it's the first time that the general public would have seen it. And, you know, as soon as Steve Smith would come on, there were increased revs. He was getting up to 2,700 revs. You know, his challenge is that he's now a backup bowler, a batter who bowls a little bit, as opposed to what he first came into the side for. And he doesn't tend to bowl enough. But every time he came on to bowl, I think everybody in the ground felt that there was a wicket in him. Whereas that wasn't always the case when Nathan Lyon bowled, although I have to say I thought he exceeded expectation and has improved over the course of the series. You wouldn't always think that was likely to happen. And there were often, you know, 500 revolutions per minute difference between the two bowlers when they were bowling in tandem. And that was really interesting. And as a result of that, it does create different ball flights and different reactions off of the pitches. So But that was them being different. Our question, we had them exactly the same because there were so many different things that we could have thrown into a melting pot. But I do like left armers. There aren't many around, and purely because you don't get to see very many of them and people aren't exposed to it as much, you know, I'd go with left armer.
Yep, so Philip, I hope that helps. It may be that your situation is different. So if your situation is slightly different, then maybe you can give us a few more details and we can go into more specifics with you. But we've done a little bit of a paper exercise here, so hopefully that'll give you something of an insight anyway. Let's head to the newsroom now. Daisy Cutter is waiting with this week's Pitch Vision headlines.
Thank you guys. Hi, I'm Daisy Cutter and this is the Pitch Vision News. In New Zealand, Taranaki District are delighted with their secret weapon that is boosting their pre-season progress into the run-up to the 2013-2014 summer. Head coach Jamie Watkins said this is the first full pre-season we have had data from Pitch Vision. It has given us a real focus, providing our bowlers with instant feedback about their objectives. On Pitch Vision Interactive, India continues to dominate the strike rate section. 9 of the top 10 strike rates are by Indian players, with Top Gun, MA, SB, JK coming in 106 wickets at 534. With a wicket every over he bowls in practice, sides will be clamouring to get him in their team. Pitch Vision sponsor player Oliver Wilkin has made his debut for Middlesex in the YB40 competition at Lords in London. Selected to play against Leicestershire, Oliver is impressed with 20 runs to claim 2 for 22 with the ball, to help guide Middlesex to an exciting 4-wicket win with 10 balls remaining. Middlesex finished 3rd in Group B and just missed out on a place in the semi-finals. For more details on these stories, check out the show notes at pitchvision.com. That's the Pitch Vision news for this week. I've been Daisy Cutter and now it's back to the panel.
Thank you very much, Daisy. Bonus, you must be proud of Oliver Wilkin, county cricket for your local side.
Oh, absolutely. The boy Wilkin, Pitch Vision stickers and blazed on his blade as he walked down through the long room and took Leicestershire for 20 of the finest YB40 runs.
And it's a good time for young players in county cricket this time of year, isn't it, Gareth? Because sides are starting to blood youngsters at the end of a season.
Yeah, they do that. I mean, I have sort of misgivings about it a little bit because it's a bit sort of token gesture for a number of them. I watched Kent the other day, and they played a number of younger players in there, and but it's a bit easy to do that at the end of the year. My question would be, what's the benefit of it massively when next year you go back to the old blokes that made you come sort of second bottom in that league anyway the year before? Do you know, I'm a bit in the middle about it, I'll be brutally honest, but it is an opportunity. But I think it needs to be managed effectively in terms of the messages that you're giving those people, because if somebody comes in and does really well and then the new season starts the following year and then gets left out, are you causing more problems than you would have done if you'd have just stuck with the same group that got you third from bottom or second bottom in that league, which is what a lot of sides have done. And I think you need to be very careful around those sort of things. We did it at Somerset for years. We'd always put the kids in towards the last quarter of the game, and then as soon as the new season started, the same blokes that failed the year before get the gig. And to me, I'm not convinced by that.
Well, good luck to Oliver. Hopefully he is not one of those players who they have a look and then he spends the next season in the second 11. We will keep an eye on him as one of our Pitch Vision faithful followers. Now, speaking of pressure, the pressure is on Mark Garraway. He has 60 seconds. He can talk about anything he likes, but he can't stop. So, Gareth, over to you for your soapbox this week.
Well, I'm going to talk about the end of the cricket season, because we're coming into that in the Northern Hemisphere and in England at the moment. And players sometimes go straight from the matches, then start batting nets and trying to put all of the things that they didn't like from the previous year right straight away. And the challenge that I have with that is that if you do that 3 or 4 seasons on the trot, where do you get your break? Where do you get your opportunity to rest your mind? Where do you get the opportunity to rest your body? Where do you get the opportunity to review and reflect properly instead of just going as a 48 month cricketer at very key stages of somebody's life? So I give people time off. I've actually written an article on it this week that I'd encourage you to have a little look at and see if that helps you during what I call a transition phase from one season into the next. There's some things that you can do to give yourself the best chance of coming back refreshed and on fire as soon as you start practicing again a couple of months on.
That is just about all we've got time for this week. The show is coming to a close. The curtain is starting to lower. But before we go, we have to decide on the winner of this week's prize, the online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And we had Lou Bazin's question about top hand and bottom hand batting. And we had Philip's question about spinners. So, Gareth, which one did you prefer this week?
I'm going to go for Louvazin's top-hand question. I thought it was a good question, and it had been taken from his own experience, and I believe that we've given him a couple of things that he can go away and work on there, and not only for him, but also for other listeners on the show. So, top-hand, bottom-hand, lighter bats, all of those things came into play, and that wins it this week.
Fabulous. It was a great question, and congratulations on winning your prize. Get in touch with us, pitchvision.com/contact, to pick that up. And you can also get in touch with the show and enter your own question in. You'll definitely get it answered if it's read out, and you may also win an online coaching course as well. So, Berners, how would somebody do that?
You can call us on 020-323-5543. Or drop us an email, and the address for that is coach@pitchvision.com.
Thank you, Bernie. Yes, it is. And you can also get us on Twitter at PB Cricket Coach. Send in your questions, your comments there. Or you can do it via Facebook, facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. You can give us a like on there if you want to, because we post videos there every day as well. So you get lots of things going on the Facebook page. If you want to subscribe to this show, you can do so by going to iTunes and doing a search for Pitch Vision Academy. Click on the subscribe button there, and all the details of what you need to do are in there. And if you don't want to use iTunes for any reason, then you can head over to pitchvision.com/academy and click on the podcast link for the RSS feed. That's about all we've got time for this week. So until next week, we'll see you next time. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Berners.
Cheers, fellas.
There's all.